there's been a huge shift from content focused to habits of mind focused around Common Core standards, the NGSS, you know, the science standards, the C3 framework for social studies, and the National Core Art Standards. They actually also capture the literacies perfectly within their discipline. Yes, there is content within the standards, but there's also this currency within all of them that really supports the literacies within the disciplines.
Aloha, and welcome to Imua Literacy, a podcast dedicated to moving Hawaii forward with local literacy solutions. I'm Erin D'Amelio.
And I'm Dr. Esmeralda Carini. And in each episode, we will be addressing perceived obstacles in literacy by thinking through solutions together with our colleagues and friends from all walks of literacy life who are based right here in Hawaii.
In today's episode, we welcome Dr. Charlotte Frambaugh-Kreitzer and Stephanie Bulow. Former teachers themselves, they are now professors at the University of Hawaii, and together they've studied disciplinary literacy and its use since 2013. And today, we're going to talk about and define disciplinary literacy, why it's important for both elementary and secondary students, and what teachers and families can do to help promote it. We cover a lot of fascinating topics in today's episode, so let's go ahead and get started.
So welcome, and we're so excited to have you guys with us on Imua Literacy Podcast, especially because you guys were also writers of the Hawaii State Literacy Plan. Our hope is that we can help spread some of the resources and materials and knowledge that's in the plan to help promote literacy practices in Hawaii. So thank you for joining us.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So how would you define disciplinary literacy?
I like to just, let's break those two words down, because Stephanie and I have written a lot and we have really unpacked the word literacy. First and foremost, we have a very expanded view of that, and ultimately it means making meanings. And then with that, the disciplines are the discipline areas, math, science, social studies. And so it's like, how do we make meaning of the discipline? So starting with just that basic foundation, then we move into looking at, okay, well then, how do we read, write, and communicate in the specialized ways in each of these discipline areas? And then that's something that we appreciate from the literature. It's not like our original definition. We credit so many others that have been writing about this, but I think that's where we kind of land.
I think what's coming up in my mind is people want to know what is content area reading?
Yes.
Versus disciplinary literacy, right? I mean, how would you define content area reading?
Everybody's talking about disciplinary literacies in the literature. It started exploding in 2008, I would say, to 2011. And here's just a short, brief example of how I was starting to make sense of it. Content area reading focused on the similarities of the literacies. So there was what's called generic literacy strategies that were teaching teachers that unite us all, because we all want to comprehend the content using these generic literacy strategies. But then disciplinary literacies was distinguishing this different definition by saying there are very specialized ways that we read, write, and communicate in each of the disciplines, and that they're more different than what content area reading was saying.
I think it would be really helpful to know some examples of like the generic reading strategies versus like those specific disciplinary, like, because I think I have an idea, but what does that actually look like?
Well, I think I can give just a basic one that I think would apply K-12. So when we think about a generic literacy strategy, perhaps it's a KWL, right? So a KWL, that throughout the reading process. It where the K stands for what do you know? So it allows students to activate schema before they enter into a text. The W is what you want to know. So that promotes inquiry and engagement within the text, because it's allowing students to think about, based on what they know, what more would they like to know? And then the L is what they learned, right? So then this would be after the reading, during reading, they're kind of recording what they've learned. It's just a framework to think about how you might, and it's not necessarily just for text. It can really be used for content, videos, any type of experience, but it's quite generic, right? And so it's something that we often see, we use in classrooms, K-12. If we were to think about that from a disciplinary perspective, Charlotte and I discovered a strategy called a KNWS. It's the same idea, but it's very specific to math. And so in this situation, the K is what facts do I know from the information in the problem? The N is what information do I not need? Because often math problems have extraneous information in them. So it's helping students sort out what they do not need to solve the problem. The W would stand for what does the problem ask me to find? And the S would be what strategy, operation, or tools will I use to solve the problem? So it's kind of the same concept, but it's very specific to mathematics. Mm-hmm. And that's not our strategy. I'll say that that is from Barton and Heidemann. That's not ours, but we, you know, discovered it in the literature. And we're like, that's a perfect example to really show the difference between what would have been a content area reading strategy versus a disciplinary literacy strategy specific to engage with mathematical text.
And there might be an appropriate time where a math teacher can say, what do you know about fractions? They can just start off with something to find out and activate prior knowledge. That still might have its appropriate place, but learning the specific discipline strategies made me realize, wow, that's where disciplinary literacies takes our instruction another notch. To us, it always goes down to the instruction. So Stephanie and I have synthesized the literature and have created what we call these five tenets around the disciplinary literacy instructional piece of that.
Could you like just name the five? What are the five tenets?
So complex text, right? So teaching comprehension of complex text, teaching the academic vocabulary, building knowledge of the discipline and the content, engaging students in inquiry around the content or the discipline, and customized literacy strategies that are embracing the habits of mind of that discipline.
Those tenets, first and foremost, we think if teachers are addressing that, they're teaching comprehension. And in our discovery, we've realized how also having a broadened sense of what text means. So for example, the first time we were in performing arts classes, we learned about the dance map. And students need overt instruction of how to read a dance map, including me. I didn't know how to read a dance map.
Yeah, I don't know what that's
so,
like.
I don't know what a dance map is. I kind of have some background knowledge.
And then we went to a science class and we saw that there were moon maps and you have to be able to read a moon map. And then we went to the math class and they work with all kinds of manipulatives that in order to comprehend those manipulatives, like a ruler, something as simple as a ruler for an elementary teacher. Did you know that those little lines are called hash marks? And that is as a text in itself. And how do you read hash marks? How do you read across a ruler? How do you comprehend it? And this is in our recent article. The comprehension would mean math teachers have to make sure that students have mathematical habits of mind, which again, the Common Core standards really honor that these mindsets are needed in math, that you have to reread. You constantly have to recheck your work. That's why that practice and discourse is so important in a math classroom. Did you check the measurements over and over, right? And a real person using a ruler, like a contractor, right? If you wanted to get your house remodeled and someone's going to put in a new kitchen, don't you hope the contractor measured your kitchen five times over, right?
It's like that phrase, measure twice, cut once.
Yes. You know the joke because you don't want your kitchen.
I never heard of that.
Hopefully it's not measure once, cut twice.
Exactly. But these are real world applications, right? Mm-hmm. In an English language arts class, we're not constantly saying, you read that sentence, reread. We don't use that languaging as much unless we want them to reread for a specific purpose. We're not telling them, okay, you read that novel, go reread it again. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm married to a high school science teacher. He's like, I didn't take a class on how to teach reading. But you know, when I started to say, well, like, what are they reading in your class? Well, they need to know how to, for example, read the periodic table, right? So then learning how to, I think a couple of things happen, honoring the text that they do use. They're not all traditional print-based texts. So I think disciplinary literacies honors and embraces the variety of texts that students will encounter across the discipline. So it really allows us to have a broadened sense of text. But again, it also honors the way that experts in that discipline engage with these texts and the ways that they create text and again, those disciplinary habits of mind. I think when you present it that way, people like my husband sitting in a professional development, he's much more open to the idea because we're honoring his discipline. And, you know, often I feel like us ELA folks, we often like to impose on the disciplines. And I felt like sometimes with content area reading and literacy, we were just kind of saying, well, here, you know, just do this without really understanding what the doing, the thinking processes and the habits of mind are in these specific content areas or disciplines. So rather than us imposing and just offering them some generics, what I feel disciplinary literacies has shifted us to into honoring the ways of being and thinking and engaging with texts within the disciplines.
I think one of the more kind of common things that I've heard, and I think other people are familiar with, is the fact that content area teachers don't see themselves as literacy teachers. But it sounds like it's much more of a matter of changing perspective from both the folks who are in ELA and also the folks who are content area teachers. And that's really like the kind of the crux of the matter there.
And, you know, I feel that those shifts in our perspectives can happen when we allow ourselves to collaborate. So, like, for example, when Charlotte and I started doing our research where we actually attended every methods course in our elementary program for a 2-year period with a cohort. We went to every class. Initially, our lens is always with our literacy bias. But as we began to talk with and understand and collaborate with our colleagues who were experts in the different disciplines, performing arts and visual arts and science and social studies and math, I think through those collaborations, both of our knowledge strengthened. The more we started to really understand disciplinary literacies, we started to realize how identity is really tied with disciplinary literacies. And so here's an example. In this cohort that we followed for 2 years and took courses with them, I also watched them teach lessons in classrooms. One student was in the band all through high school. She was a musician by trade. So she really had the identity of a musician. And I noticed when she taught a performing arts lesson that focused on music, she really was able to shine because she had knowledge. She had the identity of a musician and was enacting it as a teacher. And it was very different than, say, for example, when she might have taught math, because perhaps even though she understands the content of math as an elementary teacher, she doesn't embody the identity of a mathematician. As elementary teachers, there's no way we can embody the identity of all the disciplines, right? There's going to be one that we identify with more, but it's not imaginable for an elementary teacher to have that identity that, say, like a secondary teacher might embody.
Right.
Because that's where the initial literature on disciplinary literacies was really talking about that identity piece. And that's why there was question if it was applicable in elementary because of the identity.
Because they have to teach all the content areas.
When we really started to boil it down and think about, well, what makes it relevant in elementary and how can elementary teachers support students so that we are preparing them for those more demanding disciplinary literacies as that they'll encounter later in high school. And we felt that those 5 tenets were something that was feasible for elementary teachers. And we've been seeing how pre-service teachers have been able to implement these. Some of their lessons have all 5, you know, some have 3 or 4, but we're able to see where they're implementing them.
Can I just say something about the word mathematician? When I first started reading this, and it's said all over the place, thinking and acting like a mathematician, a historian, my first beef with that was like, well, how often do you go to a party and someone says, I'm a mathematician? Where are all these mathematicians? And that's a lot to unpack.
That actually is true.
Or I'm just a historian. I mean, I know people might identify that way, but when we go to think about this, I know I started appreciating that that's just like the catch-all word. That's a basic way. But I still think, though, that that's intimidating. Because Stephanie said, well, in elementary, that was one of our findings, that they don't identify that way. Well, and even in secondary, someone that is getting a bachelor's degree in science, they haven't necessarily been living a life of a scientist either. They just love the content usually of science, unless they've had a career somewhere out there. But a lot of them wouldn't even identify that way. But a reason I think we as teachers and parents need to be so aware of this is letting kids play with these identities is super important. So I just want to give you an example. My friend this summer, she sent her daughter, who's a third grader, to fashion camp. Doesn't that sound fun? Fashion camp. And I said, oh, tell me more about this fashion camp. It was really cool. She got to communicate, read, write, and like a fashion designer. So that's.
And design? Did she get to design?
Well, to me, it was under the performing and visual arts. She not only designed clothes. The kids were designing all kinds of stuff under the fashion world, but they were being apprenticed, that they were learning about and getting to experience and play with this idea of sewing clothes and making clothes and studying the field and set design, all the way that led to a performance-based fashion show for their families. When I think about elementary teachers, even if they're not an expert, they don't consider themselves a scientist, where do they invite students to play with these identities, to have an experience, to grow their knowledge of the vocabulary that comes in each of these different discipline areas?
If we think back to our state literacy plan, something that I really appreciate, the way that we framed our instructional practices, where we focused on stages, not ages, right? Literacy doesn't just come by ages. It's in stages, and everybody develops differently. But there's three kind of main stages, and there's all kinds of different stages, categories out there, but we chose to frame it as foundational literacies, intermediate literacies, and disciplinary literacies. And actually, you don't have to have foundational literacies before you can go on to intermediate and disciplinary. You can actually develop all three simultaneously. Obviously, you're going to have a heavier focus in kindergarten on foundational literacies, but that shouldn't stop a teacher from engaging students in conversations that are developing disciplinary literacies around a science topic, for example. So let's think about young children and how they get so just interested in topics, right? For example, like Charlotte and I were discussing how, like, you know, like I remember when my children were little, they loved dinosaurs, and the kids, they learn all these names, like these scientific names of dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Think about that vocabulary.
Yeah, so, domain specific, tier three. Yeah, there you go.
You know, so why not leverage this interest that they have around these topics to build their disciplinary literacies?
You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because we know that language and content are not separate from each other. And I would like to see more of an emphasis on teaching and using that academic language in the classroom, trying to think about, you know, how do we create different opportunities in the classroom, activities that have like a meaningful purpose for students to use some of this academic vocabulary.
I mean, I think I can just say I'm a huge fan of word study. And like, as we think about teaching students roots and bases and prefixes and suffixes, that alone, think about all the science words that if we just, you know, if we just tackled some of that in our classrooms, just that basic word study, how their vocabulary would increase.
One of the things too, is there's these general definitions. The same word translates differently in all the disciplines, like the word table. In an English class, we might be saying table of contents, but in a science class, all of a sudden it's a water table. In math, it's a table that you're reading, the table of your times table, right? And then in social studies, I want to table this in the discussion, right? The table that the kids have in mind is the table that they sit down at night to have dinner. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of words for table. Mm-hmm. That's why I think every teacher in the different content areas, you could have a specialized vocabulary notebook for each of the disciplines.
What about families though? So obviously teachers will have, you know, the tools and certain instructional strategies that they can employ in the classroom, but do you have any recommendations for families and how they might be able to promote disciplinary literacy?
You know, I think coming back to what Charlotte was talking about with identity, you know, really nurturing your child's interest there and providing them with experiences, and then having conversations about these interests and experiences. It doesn't have to be necessarily that we're forcing our children to write in journals, or, you know, we know we want them to be reading, but even just on a basic level in the car, you know, having some conversations, that engage them in the ways of the discipline. So for example, if we're thinking about science, asking them to think about why and what, or if we're thinking about social studies or history content, really like bias and why it was written, right? And so kind of getting into that and mathematical thinking patterns that they might notice. And that could be patterns anywhere, obviously in the environment or in problems. Thinking from an ELA perspective, you know, we often talk about themes and underlying messages. So just, you know, maybe just a simple toolkit for parents to think about just a couple of prompts and the ways that we might think from a discipline perspective and nurturing those identities, having those conversations, you know, creating or developing those habits of mind, I think would be important.
I love the specific examples that you guys give because that's what we're really looking for.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I'm thinking about when connecting with families out there, again, this was, and I still am guilty of this. I'll just, as soon as I see my nieces and nephews, the first thing, you know, again, here I am an educator. I'm very aware of the languaging around things, but right away, we just start with things like, what's your favorite subject, right? That's our disciplinary, that's the disciplinary, right? But we call it subject. What's your favorite subject? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? What's your least favorite? And I think that we have that real simple discourse around it, but that can also, we have to be very careful in that languaging because if someone already identifies like, oh, I'm bad at math, that shuts down opportunities to get into this math discipline discourse. And that's what worries me. And, or if we are very, as parents, be very aware of like, if you didn't have a successful, whatever XYZ subject area, how are you talking about that? Because that's the way it really plays out in our school environments where, again, we want to be very careful how that looks. And again, it goes back to that identity because kids, that's all they hear is, oh, I went to math. But when we're looking at it from these other complexities of what it really means to have a mathematical habit of mind, we're really unpacking a lot more. But I think that discourse, having families be aware of where's the invitations to talk about that. And that's why that to me is huge.
Yeah, how we talk about things really shapes what kids will be thinking about it too.
I respect both of you so much. And I am always learning from both of you. And I think what some ahas I had today was that identity piece that comes with the discipline, right? And just allowing students to explore and kind of try on that discipline is maybe our roles as teachers. What were some of your ahas, Erin?
Yeah, I think the major one is changing the perspectives on one's own identity and really thinking of it more as adopting mindsets and not necessarily confining ourselves to a label. And that goes for not only the students, but also the teachers and parents and anybody. That was definitely something that I hadn't really engaged with a whole lot. And I really appreciate both of you bringing that up for today's conversation. Thank you both so much for this. This has been incredible. Really, really valued our conversation.
I know. We just want to keep talking and talking.
I just want to let you know, Esmeralda and Erin, the respect is mutual. We respect what you're doing and out of the kindness of your heart, creating this podcast for the state. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
I couldn't do it without Erin.
And my podcast voice.
Yeah.
Once again, we thank Charlotte and Stephanie for talking with us today and for sharing with you their 5 tenets of disciplinary literacy and how we can invite our kids, and hey, why not adults too, to play with different identities. And who knows, maybe at your next party, you might introduce yourself as a historian. Mahalo for listening to Emua Literacy.